This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
A rising death toll in the Northeast. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka. On this Friday, September 3rd, thanks for being with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
At least five states along the eastern seaboard are reporting fatalities from flooding caused by the remnants of Hurricane Ida.
Some of the evacuation orders tied to the Caldor fire in California are being lifted. We'll have the latest.
How the Biden administration's evacuation plan in Afghanistan quickly collapsed in chaos. Hear what happened behind the scenes.
And Gen Z taking on debt to try to ride the stock market rally.
Low levels of financial knowledge coupled with taking on debt really threaten to leave these Americans at risk of losing more money than they can spare when markets turn volatile or crash.
Jessica Menton at USA Today on the risky Gen Z investing strategy. Officials in the Northeast are blaming what they call unprecedented speed of rainfall for flooding that's blamed on at least 46 deaths. The rains were part of what was left of Hurricane Ida. From Maryland to Connecticut, there were record-breaking rainfalls, flash floods, and tornadoes late Wednesday. Many of the victims were trapped in basements in fast-rising water and others in cars on flooded roads. In southern New Jersey, tornadoes tore through homes, farms, and trees. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy.
The storm struck while many areas were still saturated from rains from Henri, leading to severe flooding.
The flooding stranded hundreds of New Yorkers in cars and subway trains late Wednesday into yesterday. Nearly 500 vehicles were abandoned in the city and had to be removed. A man in the New York City borough of Queens told the Wall Street Journal that he was on his porch when the water levels on his block rose from 1 inch to 4 feet in about 5 minutes. Some good news regarding the western wildfires. Authorities lifted some evacuation orders in El Dorado County in Northern California, where the Caldor fire had displaced thousands. Calmer winds and moderate humidity assisted firefighters yesterday battling the two-week-old blaze. The Caldor fire covers more than 200,000 acres and is considered 25% contained. Cal Fire says orders were lifted in seven areas of El Dorado County. President Biden, meanwhile, approved an emergency declaration for California.
The fire is threatening close to 35,000 structures and more than 4,400 firefighters from the state and my federal team are working to contain and suppress this raging wildfire.
Chief Tom Porter, director of Cal Fire, said only twice in California history have blazes burned from one side of the Sierra Nevada to the other. Both this month, the Caldor and Dixie fires. The Dixie blaze, by the way, the second largest wildfire in state history, spanned more than 800,000 acres and was considered 55% contained. White House chief medical advisor Dr. Anthony Fauci says he would not be surprised if the recommended full regimen for the Pfizer and Moderna COVID vaccines becomes three doses instead of two. He spoke to reporters yesterday. He says giving the additional dose, or perhaps a final dose, several months after people have received their initial vaccination helps the immune system mature. His comments come as the Biden administration prepares to begin widely distributing COVID booster shots in about 2 weeks.
I would hope that the countries that are boosting their populations, similar to what we are, understand the importance of the global necessity to essentially suppress this at a global level.
The plan calls for a third dose 8 months after people get their second shot of either the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines. New studies released by the CDC said vaccine protection against COVID infection diminished several months after people received their second dose. Start fall with everything to do business better during Dell Technologies Labor Day event. Save up to 45% on select business PCs with Windows 10 Pro. Power your workday with savings on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and other accessories, plus free shipping on everything. Do more with modern devices and Windows 10 Pro. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL for business specials during Dell's Labor Day event. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Friday. At the beginning of the Biden administration's frenetic evacuation campaign from the airport in Kabul, U.S. diplomats tried to prioritize those Afghans who had served alongside American troops during the war, some of whom already had U.S. visas in their passports. But that plan quickly collapsed in chaos. Here to explain behind the scenes is Deirdre Shesgreen, foreign affairs reporter at USA Today. Deirdre, what went down?
It sounds like the U.S. consular officials, the officials who staff the U.S. embassy in Kabul, which is now closed, faced just an inordinate number of challenges as they were trying to evacuate Afghans. And some of the challenges included, like, for example, they tried to prioritize certain groups of Afghans for evacuation, including those who served with the U.S. military during the 20-year war. And some of those people had already been vetted. They were on their way to getting U.S. visas or even had U.S. visas. So the consular officials who had relocated to the airport once the Taliban took control of the country, they tried to provide some kind of electronic credential to these vetted Afghans so that they could get through Taliban checkpoints and gain access to the airport. And as you remember, there was just this crush of people at the airport trying to get through, and the U.S. was cooperating with the Taliban on security to try to keep the crowds, you know, to keep out ISIS fighters. Anyway, so what this senior State Department official who briefed reporters yesterday said, in some cases, they would provide this credential, and then, you know, within an hour, hundreds of people would have it. And so it became inoperable. I mean, it became irrelevant.
Well, so they were sharing it, right? I mean, there was like texting each other or forwarding it to each other.
He said it went viral. Yes. Wow. So hundreds of people would have it, and then suddenly they couldn't use it anymore to distinguish who had been vetted and who hadn't in the crowd. He said that the Taliban was also changing their criteria sometimes by the hour of who they were letting through. They thought they would have an understanding with the Taliban about who to let through, and then somehow that would work for a little bit, and then it would stop working. They had some instances where people would show up, they would call, they'd say, look, I have, you know, five Americans, American citizens outside the gate. And they would go out and they would find a group of Americans with hundreds of Afghans, and the groups refused to be separated, and they didn't have, you know, they didn't know who necessarily all the Afghans were. They didn't have necessarily the capacity to evacuate the combined group of people. So he said it really just became, you know, a bit cactus catch can, ad hoc. I mean, they were taking people, for example, he said they would get a human rights organization would say, okay, we have all these locally employed Afghans and they need to get out because they're at risk. And so they would just say, okay, well, we can't vet every single person on this list, but we know the organization, we know, you know, we can verify them. So they would just evacuate those people. And it really became extraordinarily hectic. And he said that they were just haunted by the choices that they had to make.
We're speaking with Deirdre Shesgreen, foreign affairs reporter at USA Today. Her piece is called U.S. Official Describes Evacuation Mayhem. And then on top of that, if I understand it correctly, you had a lot of Afghans who had paperwork that would get them on, say, an evacuation plane. But when the Taliban took over, they had to destroy that paperwork so they didn't get caught with it if the Taliban came knocking at the door, and then they're back to square one in terms of an application.
Right. I mean, as soon as the Taliban took over, a lot of people started destroying evidence of any affiliation with U.S. or Western organizations. You know, and so, yeah, suddenly their chances of getting out were greatly diminished because they don't have the documents that they need to prove they are who they say they are. And a lot of them just went into hiding. I mean, I've been in touch with one former U.S. interpreter who worked with U.S. military for years. And you know, he's been terrified. He went to the airport at one point and a soldier let him on the base, but then the Taliban, they let him and a bunch of people on initially, and then the Taliban made them all leave. And so I honestly don't know where he is at this point.
It's Deirdre Shesgreen, foreign affairs reporter at USA Today. This portion of the program is brought to you by Angie. Summertime means backyard barbecues, outdoor movie nights, and family vacations. It also means mowing the grass, restaining the deck, and painting the house. Wouldn't it be nice if you could conveniently manage your home's to-do list all in one place? Meet Angie, your home for everything home. Previously known as Angie's List, Angie connects you with top local pros who can help with home projects big and small. This summer, enjoy more and work less. Check out Angie.com today. 20 minutes after the hour on this morning, here's Rasa Kay.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The cleanups continue in major mid-Atlantic cities a second day after fast-moving remnants of Tropical Storm Ida pounded them, sparking catastrophic flooding and destructive tornadoes. Investigations are being launched into illegal basement apartment conversions in New York City, where 11 people died when they were trapped by rising floodwaters. In New Jersey, at least 23 deaths are blamed on the storms that unleashed historic rains, and at least 8 tornadoes from southern Pennsylvania to Cape Cod. President Biden is sending federal help.
There's a lot of damage, and I made clear to the governors that my team at the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, is on the ground and ready to provide all the assistance that's needed.
Number two.
Mr. Biden will survey the damage caused by Hurricane Ida and meet with state and local leaders in Louisiana today, where hundreds of thousands are struggling through power and water outages and stifling heat and humidity with no indication from power company Energy on when the lights and air conditioners might go back on. On the plus side, some commercial flights have resumed at Louis Armstrong International in New Orleans, and more power has been restored to the business district.
Number three.
Dr. Anthony Fauci says the U.S. is monitoring a new COVID variant called Mu, first spotted in Colombia last winter and feared to be capable of evading vaccines. But he says Delta is still job one.
Delta is dominant and is responsible for new cases, including severe disease.
A former Georgia prosecutor has been indicted on misconduct charges, alleging she used her position to shield the men who chased and killed Ahmaud Arbery. Arbery, who is black, was fatally shot in 2020 by a white father and son who say they thought he was a burglar. They were free for months but faced trial this fall. One of them had worked with the prosecutor who at the time instructed police he not be placed under arrest. The Office of Inspector General for the U.S. Capitol Police has released an official report stating the department's communication was flawed during its response to the assault on the U.S. Capitol in January. The department acknowledges the gaps but cites the sheer amount of communications during the attack. One of the most successful music groups of all time is back after nearly 40 years. ABBA drops a new album called Voyage. November 5th, plans to perform digitally via avatars with a live 10-piece band in a purpose-built arena in London next May. The members of ABBA are now all in their 70s. The digital versions represent them in their prime. I think we should call them avatars.
Oh.
I waited all day.
No. You can't.
Oh, avatars.
You can't do that.
You see what I did there?
You can't fill in and drop grenades like that. That's
avatars.
No. Avatars. Thank you, Rasa. I think coming up next, they no longer want to be called travel agents.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Glad you're with us. Travel has grown difficult lately thanks to virus-related complexity, uncertainty, cancellations, delays, border restrictions, and testing requirements. As a result, many travelers booking a beach getaway or other trips are turning to professionals to help them with plans. Turns out travel advisors, don't call them travel agents anymore, are cool again. So says Scott McCartney, travel writer at the Wall Street Journal. Scott, explain.
You know, there are a lot of businesses that have benefited from the pandemic in some ways. And it turns out it looks like travel agencies are going to be one of them. Now they've gone through tremendous pain of working like crazy for no pay at all, basically dealing with clients who canceled trips, who got stranded, who needed refunds, who, you know, all kinds of things in the pandemic. But now that people are traveling again, it's so complicated that they're smartly finding that professional advice is helpful. And so a lot of people who would do it themselves in the past are turning to travel advisors. We don't really call them agents anymore, but travel advisors, because they can help them when things go wrong. They can help them navigate the rapidly changing requirements to cross borders, to get tested to come back to the United States. There are just all kinds of new wrinkles in travel.
Yeah. There's definitely peace of mind. I've used a couple for some more complicated trips. There's definitely peace of mind knowing you can get help on the other end. But what's that business model like these days? How much are you paying for that peace of mind?
Well, I think the prices are going up. I think most agents, not all, but many were charging service fees, client fees, or even retainers for clients before. And it could be anywhere, you know, from $40 to several hundred for more complicated trips. You know, in talking with travel advisors, they basically said, look, it's more complicated. It's taking more hours to book trips. The prices are going up. In general, I think the minimums are probably going up more towards $100. And the upper end, you know, $500, $600, $1,000 for more complicated trips.
Yeah. We're speaking with Scott McCartney, travel columnist at The Wall Street Journal. His story is called Travel Agencies Are Having a Moment Amid COVID-19 Chaos. There was somebody, too, who said in your story, he thinks there's been a new appreciation for how the job has changed of being a travel agent or travel advisor. How so?
You know, I think more training is required, and a lot more information gathering is required. So travel advisors, travel companies are learning how to tap into databases about border requirements, for example. Airlines are pretty good at this. Airlines are starting to share some of this with major travel agencies. You know, I mean, we just saw this past week the rules changed in Europe, and all of a sudden the European Union said we don't want Americans for non-essential travel.
Thanks, Scott. Scott McCartney, travel writer at The Wall Street Journal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Do you love seafood when you're out to eat but never make it for yourself at home? Yeah, me too. But the key to restaurant quality at home starts with high-quality seafood and simple techniques from Wild Alaskan Company. With Wild Alaskan Company, you're getting high-quality, sustainably sourced, wild-caught seafood delivered right to your door. Choose from salmon, whitefish, or a combination. Money back if you're not happy. I went with the Wild Combo Box. Fired it up on the grill with a little garlic, lemon, and parsley. It was like sitting at some dockside restaurant in the last frontier. Each piece of fish was individually wrapped and labeled. Plus, the packaging can be composted. Wild Alaskan Company seafood is always wild, never farmed or modified, and contains no antibiotics. It's how nature intended it. And right now, you can get $15 off your first box of premium seafood when you visit wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon. That's wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon for $15 off your first box. wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon.
The news without the nonsense. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Friday, September 3. Gordon Deal with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Flooding in the Northeast has taken at least 46 lives. Some evac orders for the Caldor fire have eased. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi wants federal legislation codifying Roe v. Wade. General Motors suspending production at North American assembly plants because of the chip shortage. McDonald's reportedly considering closing to indoor dining because of the Delta variant. U.S. men's soccer opened World Cup qualifying with a tie against El Salvador. And beyond sourdough, the next lockdown baking trend. That story in about 20 minutes. Climate shocks are pushing small rural communities, many of which were already struggling economically, to the brink of insolvency. Rather than bouncing back, places hit repeatedly by hurricanes, floods, and wildfires are unraveling. Residents and employees leave, the tax base shrinks, and it becomes even harder to fund basic services. It's a story by Christopher Flavelle, climate reporter at the New York Times. Christopher, what have you found here?
Yeah, so I spent time this summer in a few towns in eastern North Carolina, and I wanted to go to places that have been hit by several major historic floods and get a sense of what the recovery is like. There's this idea, I think, in the climate discussion that these storms are kind of a one-off, and eventually towns that get flooded or hit by wildfires or any kind of disaster, that eventually they bounce back. And what I found in North Carolina is that may have been true at one point, but we're getting to a point where these disasters become so frequent and so bad that it's starting to look like, at least in some places, instead of bouncing back, these towns are unraveling instead. And they are losing population that isn't coming back. They're struggling to make payroll. They're seeing their tax base shrink up. And it's starting to look like the long-term prognosis, even the medium-term prognosis for these places, is pretty dire.
Wow. I mean, is there such a scenario where a town just dies off? People just leave?
Yeah, you know, it's a grim question. But I think one question is, what does it look like for a town to die, to end because of climate change? And it might not be as straightforward as everyone's gone and it's just a ghost town. Though that could be the case in some places, I think more likely it's going to be they stop rebuilding after storms, they get smaller and smaller, and the people who wind up staying are probably the ones who just can't go anywhere else. And the quality of life is not something that anybody would think is okay in the United States.
We're speaking with Christopher Flavelle, climate reporter at the New York Times. He's got a story about how these repeated shocks from things like hurricanes, fires, and floods are bankrupting America's small towns. So in Fairbluff, North Carolina, which you profiled, the question there, like it is in many spots, is when to build back and when to move away. And the moving away, I guess, is the government purchasing homes necessarily to encourage people to leave?
Certainly local officials in these places, they want the money to build back. They want their best shot at recovery. But in the meantime, again, their population keeps on shrinking because, understandably, people who've been pushed out of their homes two or three times by hurricanes, maybe they don't want to be there anymore. And I think what happens is there's two decisions happening. The decision by local officials is keep rebuilding, understandably. But the decision by people who actually live in these houses is, this is not for me. And at the end of the day, it's that collection of individual decisions that really determines if these places survive.
Yeah. You referenced in Fairbluff, North Carolina, that I think there was a proposal that would have included putting in a park that maybe would help with some of the flooding issues, but the residents didn't want that, or the town didn't want it?
Yeah, you know, it's even more complicated. So the entire downtown of Fairbluff got just destroyed by Hurricane Matthew in 2016. It got flooded again by Hurricane Florence in 2018. But Florence, in a sense, didn't matter because nothing had been rebuilt after 2016. And when I was there this summer, nothing had been touched. It was all as though the first flood had just happened. All the debris was littered across these stores. And the town realizes it just doesn't make sense to build back. It's so exposed where they are. So their plan is find the money to tear down all those buildings, turn it into a park that can safely flood, rebuild a downtown just on slightly higher ground, and use that to sort of trigger a renewal of the town. Now, the problem is they don't have any of the money they need to do all that. It's really expensive. They've got maybe 700 residents. And so they are saying, we can only recover if we can find government agencies that will pay for all of it. And right now they can't. And so they're really stuck.
Thanks, Chris. Christopher Lavelle, climate reporter at the New York Times. Coming up next, a risky Gen Z investment strategy. You know, in November, I'll celebrate 16 years of hosting this show in one form or another. Whenever those kinds of milestones come up, it's special. And Cuts Clothing is having an anniversary of their own this month. It's been 5 years since Cuts founder Steve Borelli decided to create clothing for any and every occasion, like their signature buttery soft Pika Pro Tri-Blend t-shirts and polos, cozy Hyperloop French Terry fabric hoodies, and more. Everything I've worn from Cuts is next level comfort. I love their stuff. From their polos to their crew sweatshirts, all classics, made modern with custom engineered fabrics you have to wear to believe. They've created a comfortable fit without compromising on timeless, universally flattering style. If you haven't worn one yourself, it's time to try the only shirt worth wearing. And this week is the perfect time. This month marks the Cuts' fifth anniversary. And they're doing it big with two collection drops, a product launch, and a week-long special event. Go to cutsclothing.com/Gordon to get 25% off site-wide during their anniversary sale. That's 25% off site-wide at cutsclothing.com/Gordon. Thanks for being with us. Many Americans, led by Generation Z investors, have taken on debt to invest in the pandemic stock market boom after young investors were hamstrung by the second recession in their lifetimes and prime earning years. Insight from Jessica Menton, personal finance reporter at USA Today. Jess, what's going on?
At USA Today, we've been examining the aspirations and anxieties of young Americans, particularly Gen Z, as some have made risky bets by taking out loans to invest. And low levels of financial knowledge coupled with taking on debt really threaten to leave these Americans at risk of losing more money than they can spare when markets turn volatile or crash. And that's especially true when you're looking at assets like cryptocurrencies, which can obviously see wild swings within a day or even minutes. And so we took some data that came from a survey recently from Magnify Money that found about 4 in 10 investors say they've taken on debt to invest. And that includes about 80% of Gen Zers and 60% of millennials. And obviously their elders were significantly less likely to do so. And when you're looking at Gen Z investors, they were most likely to turn to friends or family for a loan, while millennials and Gen X investors were more likely to take out a personal loan.
Well, and those, overall, those guys have been like involved in some trauma, though, with regards to this, right?
The backdrop when you're looking at a lot of these investors going through two once-in-a-lifetime recessions in just a little over a decade apart, and different ways different demographics have been impacted like that, especially when you're looking at elder millennials and also Gen Xers, where they're it's sandwiched between where they have younger children or maybe they're a little bit more grown now, but then they also potentially are taking care of their parents as they're getting older at the same time. Whereas if you're looking at Gen Z, they're just coming out of high school, maybe just graduated from college, but they're also trying to feel the pressures of this is their first, when you're looking at the pandemic, the first time they've kind of gotten into investing. And this almost is kind of a skewed view, because normally when you're coming out of a recession like we did last year, you wouldn't see quite the rebound in the stock market that you would have seen. And so obviously this year you've seen so much rejuvenation with the meme stock frenzies, what's been going on with cryptos, SPACs, NFTs. And so now you have these really young investors, which it's a good thing to start investing young, but there is this risky behavior when you're starting to ask friends and family for money. And that's really tricky because it can cause a lot of strain in those relationships.
We're speaking with Jessica Menton, personal finance and markets reporter at USA Today. She's done a deep dive entitled Gen Z Takes on Debt to Invest in Markets. Here are the risks. All right, so we saw this back with home equity lines of credit back in the day also, you know, in a previous market boom. So if you don't want to miss out, if you're young, you feel you've been burned before, I mean, what's the best approach then?
That's a great question. And Gen Zers began entering the workforce shortly before the pandemic hit. And that was when unemployment rates were at historic lows and jobless rates have subsequently skyrocketed and have eventually leveled off in the pandemic. But when you're looking at over the longer term, when it comes to investing, since 1950, the S&P 500 which is the benchmark for most mutual funds, it's averaged an 8% annual return. And it's gone through about 32 drops of 10% or more in that span. So when you're seeing sort of like we saw last year when we saw the market crash, ended up being the fastest bear market in history, but we did see the broader S&P 500 drop nearly 34% from its recent high at that point, only to quickly rebound.
Thanks, Jess. Jessica Menton, personal finance and markets reporter at USA Today. Don't forget, by the way, you can check out a podcast of our program on our website, thismorningwithgordondeal.com, or on all the popular podcast platforms. Start fall with everything to do business better during Dell Technologies Labor Day event. Save up to 45% on select business PCs with Windows 10 Pro. Power your workday with savings on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and other accessories, plus free shipping on everything. Do more with modern devices and Windows 10 Pro. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL for business specials during Dell's Labor Day event. Glad you could be with us. Don't forget to check us out on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter, at This Morning Show. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well, at Gordon Deal. 9 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Rasa Kay.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The record-breaking rain across the Northeast from the remnants of Hurricane Ida is blamed for at least 46 deaths from Maryland to Connecticut, drowning people in their homes and their cars. In Philadelphia, the main thoroughfare through the city is still closed, a temporary car-submerging lagoon, as pumping efforts continue.
The storm struck while many areas were still saturated from rains from Henri, leading to severe flooding.
New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy visited the tornado-ravaged community of Mullica Hill, where an EF3 twister splintered homes and farms.
Number two.
A bottleneck of tankers is growing around Louisiana's ports, waiting to discharge crude imports for refineries or load refined products for exports. While most ports have been reopened, operations at the Port Fourchon hub are not back up, and refineries still have spotty electricity. Governor John Bel Edwards says out-of-town crews are a godsend.
We do have more than 25,000 crew members. These are linemen, vegetation crew members, and so forth, from a total of 38 states, some from as far away as California and Maine.
Number three.
New Zealand is reeling from an apparent terror attack. Police fatally shot a knife-wielding man who went on a rampage at an Auckland supermarket today, leaving six people fighting for their lives. Cops had actually been surveilling the man, a person of interest, since 2016 for his expressed support for the Islamic State militant group. New research from Israel boosts the value of COVID-19 boosters. The preprint study, not yet peer-reviewed, finds adults who received a third Pfizer shot see what the authors call an 11-fold decrease in their risk of infection. Virgin Galactic's Spaceship 2 is grounded until the FAA approves an investigation report from its July flight. The descent of the rocket plane that carried British billionaire Richard Branson to the edge of space went off course for a time. The FAA wants to make sure there's nothing in that wobble that could affect public safety. And the sports memorabilia website Leland's is auctioning off a pair of Michael Jordan's underwear bearing signs of definite use. Starting bid is $500. As for provenance, the site says the briefs are being sold by a family member of Jordan's former security guard who got them as a gift from the legendary Chicago Bulls player.
Just back that up 1 second. Michael Jordan, so I'm clear, gives used underwear as a gift
to his staff.
To a guy who protected him.
Signs of definite use.
Definite use, in quotes.
Upping the price.
The underwear has been definitely used and there's evidence. Great. Thanks, Rasa.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for being with us. Here's a trend worthy of replicating. At the far reaches of the baking world, kitchens spitting out frog bagels, koala cookies, and wombat cake. The Wall Street Journal says Australians who are stir-crazy now that they're back under COVID lockdowns are trying to fashion wildlife pastries at home. not all of it, appetizing. In Melbourne, two guys spent about a week on a double chocolate cake wombat. They managed to fashion a compartment in the cake's rear end to dispense peppermint fudge pellets resembling the animal's cube-shaped droppings. Elsewhere, Eliza Middleton made one cupcake with her young son that depicted a termite mound and another the nest of a trapdoor spider. They're part of an annual contest to make realistic baked goods depicting Australia's threatened animals and post them on social media. She wasn't thrilled by how the cupcakes tasted. Ms. Middleton didn't have all the proper ingredients on hand. She said, "It's a good thing it's a bake-off and not a taste test." That'll do it for this hour. For Rasa K, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.